Now on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's time for the only area radio show devoted exclusively to football. That is to say, soccer.
Local MLS, Premier League, and international.
It's Blokes on the Bench, and you can reach us at 434-284-9470 or at facebook.com/blokesonthebench. Now here's your host, Andy Richardson.
All right, Charlottesville.
Welcome along to another edition of Blokes on the Bench. We've got a quiet show today.
Maybe not.
For those that are listening to the podcast on iTunes and are not from the Charlottesville area, we had a lot of sleet and ice this morning. And obviously the Super Bowl. And
so, the what?
The what?
What's that?
I don't know.
Never heard of it.
All right, so it's just the two of us. Just the two of us.
Just Andy and Christian. Christian and Andy.
So let's get right on to it. So this weekend, we did have midweek games.
Yeah, there's been a lot that's happened since the last time we were all in house. We didn't have a show last week, as I recall.
No.
It was FA Cup weekend,
right, so we
took the weekend off. And between that last show that we did 2 weeks ago and today, a lot of football's happened. The transfer window closed. There were a lot of matches that went on along. I feel like the entire landscape of the Premier League has shifted or changed. The bottom of the table continues to be where the most entertainment is, and the top has a leader in front that slipped up a little bit over the weekend, but we'll get to that. But the transfers, I think, were such a huge part of those 2 weeks time that we last saw each other. I think we hadn't talked to each other, seen each other since Alexis Sanchez made his Manchester United debut, which he made in the League Cup on Friday of last week. And then made his Premier League debut yesterday. What do you think of what you've seen of Alexis Sanchez so far?
The FA Cup game, I thought that he played decently. I thought that he made some good movement, some good passing. The game against Tottenham, which I will say, and I was mentioning to you this, that since Alex has been part of the show, a Spurs fan, every time United have played Spurs, or Spurs have played United, he's never been in the studio for the game. And I thought it was because we were obviously beating them all the time, but obviously they beat us.
Yeah, this time turnabout is
so maybe I get a bit of a reprieve on that.
Yeah.
But I thought he was, I thought he played pretty poorly against Tottenham. And yesterday against Huddersfield, I thought he was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
and I read some stat that he had lost the ball more than any player in the Premier League, which I understand that point of view. But if you're making so many passes, you're gonna the averages are gonna kind of even out,
right?
You know, and so, but the goal that he scored yesterday, the penalty, he had the foresight and the discipline to follow through,
right?
And that's actually harder than a lot of people imagine. A lot of people just kick it and wait.
Right.
No, he kicks it, the goalkeeper pawns it off, and he manages to get a rebound shot in.
Yeah,
and
I thought that was great.
Yeah. So I did hear that it was all spoiled because of some cheesy sign that some fans were holding at the Stretford end that said something about welcome to Manchester Sanchez, and then there's two dogs and a big photograph of him hugging them.
Yep.
I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, it was kind of lighthearted. It wasn't anything offensive.
No, I think it's a nice way to show you're welcoming someone into the fold who's probably a little more unique individually than other Premier League players or footballers in general. Alexis Sanchez is a very interesting character, and his love affair with his dogs is well known, and his piano playing, apparently. I didn't know
that either.
Until the announcement came in. I thought it was, again, Manchester City were trying to pry Mr. Sanchez away from Arsenal, apparently, for quite a bit of time, and were unable to sign the deal or make the deal once Sanchez demanded certain wages that we're still, I don't know that we have an accurate number as to what it is. I don't think we ever really know what those numbers are. It's rumored 500 million, 500,000 a week. I don't know, 350, 400, whatever it is. It's a lot of money. The swap that they make with Arsenal, I think, works for both teams really well. And that little merry-go-round of so many players involved, it's hard to keep it all straight. But between Alexis Sanchez going to Manchester United and Mkhitaryan going back to Arsenal, and then the swap of all the strikers between Borussia Dortmund, Chelsea, and Arsenal, with Giroud going to
Chelsea. Ooh, yeah, there's going to be some booze in the crowd when they play
no
each other.
No doubt. And he wanted to stay in London, apparently, and that was part of all the dealings that they had to make. The original rumor was that he was going to go to Borussia Dortmund, which he didn't want to leave London, so they figured a way to make it work with Chelsea. Chelsea sends Batshuayi to Dortmund on loan for the rest of the season. And now you have Aubameyang in the Premier League scoring goals for fun. I mean, he's already off to a fast start. If you saw the Arsenal game
yesterday. Was it 5-0? Was it 5-1?
4-1.
4-1.
We'll get to that match. Maybe it was 5-1. I watched that with Mark, actually, last I saw Mark.
No wonder you can't remember.
I was shocked at how fast that game got out of control. Arsenal looked really good and controlled a lot of that match, and Everton didn't look good. But that was some of the biggest player movement we've seen in the transfer window in January, especially.
We haven't even talked about Mahrez and the trouble that's causing now.
Right, and that's another deal where Manchester City tried to get a player for a reasonable amount of money, and Leicester held out for $95 million, apparently, was the number that they put down. And Manchester City obviously weren't going to spend that much money. It's always the big joke about how much money City want to spend. But they have a budget, and whether that budget's $1 trillion or a billion.
Budget's a budget.
It's a budget, and that's what they're going to stick to. And I don't necessarily blame them. I think that Mahrez's behavior after all this goes to show that maybe it's okay that this didn't happen, because having a player... kind of act petulant afterwards. Now, this isn't the first time he's maneuvered his way, tried to maneuver his way out of Leicester, and the club have not let him go.
So there's a fine line, though, between the love of the game and the business side of it. If you're a player, you know, fans, you know, when they adore you, they think that you're playing for that club and that you're a fan of that club.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, you may not be.
Right.
And, you know, people threw the word missionary around, you know, like that Sanchez. No, it's a business, too. You know, if you get a better job, regardless of how much of a family that first job, you're going to take it if it's better pay.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just the way we work.
And I'm not taking a dig at you as a United supporter, but for a long time, the old sentiment was, your players make money, our players make history.
Yeah, we heard that.
And it was silly then. It's even sillier now, especially as United continue to splash the cash when they possibly can, as a big club is going to do. There was someone who made a comment or posted an article on the local Charlottesville Facebook Premier League page about how Spurs, no matter how well they've done with developing their talent, just can't succeed because they're not going to spend the money of a Manchester United or a Manchester City.
Right.
But their day is coming, and all these teams are just assets hanging out there for someone to come pick off. And as we've talked here on the show, that Spurs are held by some holding company who are just going to sell them on. They're moving into a new stadium next year. So the future for Spurs is bright. I hope that their supporters can hold to their, we don't pay for players.
Yeah, but with Tottenham, I can see, you know, if they're not careful, they can go the same way Arsenal are going down.
I think so Arsenal have this weird arc of history going on right now where it seems like they should be going in some transition, but because of Wenger holding on...
I think it's also the stadium, though. I mean, it was 2006, I believe, at the stadium. Mm-hmm. But that's still a part of it. It's like this perfect storm of, you got a giant stadium that you're not willing to... You're trying to pay that off and be fiscally conservative with your money. You're not buying the right players now. Aubameyang, I mean, he's made an impression already, and that's a great signing for Arsenal.
Absolutely.
I think they may actually come out of this deal with United and Sanchez actually better off.
I think overall they improved themselves the most out of any team in the January window, given that they brought in a dynamic striker where Giroud, who I think we're all fans of, I think he's a fantastic player. He seems to work best in coming off the bench and scoring late goals, headed goals, which is sort of his trademark at this point.
Yep.
But bringing in a player like Aubameyang, who's got so much speed and can now team up with his old partner from Borussia Dortmund and Mkhitaryan. They already connected in the match on Saturday. Mkhitaryan had 3 assists in the game and Aubameyang scored. So they're off to a nice start. They've re-signed Ozil to a three-year contract for a lot of money. And
there
that's the funny
Mark
thing.
You stand with you guys.
Yeah, and Wenger came out in the press. Again, we're going to come back to money. Wenger came out this week and talked about how there's just no way that they can compete against these sides that can spend the money that they do, forgetting that Arsenal have bought a player like Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil. Both of those two players did not come cheap.
Right.
And granted, they went and made the move to get Sanchez so they could get Mkhitaryan. I like the fact that they held to what they wanted to do. We need a playmaker to take the place of this person that we're going to lose. We know we can't afford both players' wages, Ozil and Sanchez, going into next year. So they moved some things around, and they did really well. And, of course, now they have to still go buy maybe a defensive midfielder, which they've refused to do since Patrick Vieira's days, and maybe a goalkeeper that's a little maybe younger and stronger than Peter Cech. I don't know if Cech is the long-term answer there.
Right. He's getting old.
He's getting old, and as we all are. But it's an interesting thing to see what Arsenal can do. Now, can Arsenal finish in the top four? Is that the ambition this year? Can they win Europa? Are they going to go the Manchester United route where perhaps they finish out of the top four? But they can really go after the Europa Cup. I mean, there's it's definitely out there.
We call it a Mickey Mouse Cup. However, if you win it, it actually means something. Like, there's certain cups where, like, yeah, you know, we're in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we obviously give Mark some slack for being it, but we were in it last year. Mm-hmm. Manchester United were in it.
Yep.
And if you win it, then it means something. It's a ticket into the Champions League.
I think now that is the grand prize of this competition,
right,
it's absolutely worthwhile, especially if you're a side that can't break through that top four in these leagues that can be somewhat packed at the top. The Premier mm-hmm. League is essentially a top six or seven side league, and La Liga's turned into a three or four team race every year for the top four. So these other teams that can get into the fifth and sixth spot that can go compete for this, that'll play against other sides very similar to them that may not have the money to go buy the players they need or afford to keep the better players that they do have. Now they can pursue something that will fill their coffers. Getting into Champions League is a lot of money and worth going for. And I applaud what Manchester United did, because Mourinho, in spite of the fact that he can be infuriating to most of us that aren't United supporters or Mourinho fans, he ran a campaign last year that was extremely successful and won cups for United, and again, not taking a shot at you, that they never won before because they simply weren't in those competitions.
Right.
And here they've gotten the job done. Mickey Mouse cups like the EFL Cup, which Manchester City will face Arsenal in 2 weeks, which that's an event I think that's passed since we last saw each other, where City beat Bristol and then Arsenal beat Chelsea in their semifinals. So they'll face each other the last week of February in that cup. That, to me, is a Mickey Mouse Cup. There's really nothing to be won for that. We've talked here on the show where maybe if you're playing in Champions League, you shouldn't be allowed to play in these leagues, or you have to play under 23s.
I think if you've got the strength and depth, the EFL Cup, while yes, I agree with you, there's no prestige in necessarily being in it. The same way in the FA Cup, you know, if you're in the FA Cup, there's prestige there.
Sure.
The EFL Cup to me only really matters as a trophy number. Like, if you win the Champions League, the FA Cup, the league, and then you have the EFL Cup added onto mm-hmm. that, you can say you won four trophies.
And no one's ever done that.
Right.
That would be an incredible achievement. I don't foresee Manchester City doing that this year.
Right.
But the fact that we're fighting on four fronts is exciting, but you're spending a lot of assets as far as player energy
right.
and risk of injury, as we're seeing with some of the horror tackles that Manchester City have faced over the past few months, that possibly somebody gets hurt, and then your Champions League pursuit is affected by that. I mean, Manchester City, again, for all the money, for all the talent, have some severe injuries that they have to deal with. And there's not really an answer when you're top heavy as Manchester City are. The bench isn't great. There's nothing that's been developed so far that can take the place of these players from the youth academy. There are some young players on the side, but they've not yet come through. So we'll see what happens, but you're right. If you're in the cup, it's great to possibly win it. I'm still toying with the idea of right. going over to see this cup final, because how many opportunities do you get to see something like that? Manchester City will play Arsenal at Wembley, and then they play that following Thursday against each other at the Emirates. So that's an interesting dynamic. Which is more important? What do you focus your energy on? Because it's a pretty quick turnaround from Sunday to Thursday. I think both teams will go for it when it comes time to play.
Right.
I don't believe that Mkhitaryan is eligible to play in that but
I don't really understand the rules of this eligibility, because it works in the Champions League as well, right?
Right, right. If you were in Europa, you can't play in Champions League, but if you were in Champions League, you can play in Europa. It's something odd like that, and I
figures down the hierarchy.
I hate to admit that I don't know it, but we, City, haven't been in that position where we've brought a player in like that, so I've never really had to look at it, but the cup competitions are getting interesting. We're on the verge of Champions League coming back in a week or two.
Can't wait.
Yeah, Valentine's Day. We've got Real Madrid playing, I forget who it is, and I'm not going to look at the computer.
Yeah, so. They're going downhill. What is up with Real Madrid?
Yeah, Real Madrid, they drew over the weekend. I think they're in third at the moment in La Liga. But you know, something that we don't talk about, and we don't talk about other leagues as much as maybe we should, and that's because we're just Premier League fanatics in the room, right. I suppose. But I do enjoy my La Liga matches, and I love my Bundesliga matches for sure. That Barcelona is undefeated this year. That they have not lost a match. And for all the talk that for City going through the league and being invincible, I guess, again, this is the narrative that everybody with the Premier League is so focused on that.
City.
And, right. You know, meanwhile, a team like Barcelona, we don't talk about.
That would be a mouth-watering Champions League final, City versus Barcelona.
Yeah, it really would. And seeing the old boss come back to faces, that would be very interesting. But as we've talked about, I think the transfers were really, really crazy this January, probably the craziest I can recall in a January window. City getting a defender over, which is very exciting because the depth there just wasn't there for Manchester City. Again, knowing they've spent 250, 300 million on all these defenders over the past 2 or 3 years, there was no investment there the previous 5, 6 years. All they did were buy offensive players. So now we're stuck buying as many players as we possibly can. There's a lot of rumors of a new FFP coming around, too. FFP 2.0 is what they're rumored calling it. I don't know what exactly that will mean.
Well, what I had heard, and I don't know the ins and outs, is this January transfer window was so busy that people were scrambling around because financial fair play rules are starting to target the January transfer window.
Interesting.
And I guess that takes effect maybe, I don't know, maybe in the summer or something like that, where they start going after the January transfer window. So people were just scrambling to buy and take and sell players back and forward when they still can.
Right.
It's interesting what you said, though, about how your team is top-heavy and doesn't have the depth necessarily with the injuries.
Right.
I find that fascinating because not to sort of gloat over Manchester City, but like your team has been seen this year as the most as near perfect as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only you can't stop somebody from doing a horrible challenge.
No,
you know that's something you can't like. And this is what worries me about United with Sanchez. We saw it in the FA Cup. You know, when the guy came right in behind him. I think that's one of the reasons why Mourinho took him off.
Mm-hmm.
It's like welcome to the FA Cup.
Right.
You know, you can't. There's nothing you can do about that. No money in the world is going to stop an opponent player going, right, I'm taking your legs.
Right, right.
You know, and that, I guess that's one of the things you get with a league as competitive. The players are going to do that occasionally. But I do find that interesting that you mentioned that.
I think competition's part of it. I also think that players get tired because there is no break like there are in other leagues. So where a player may have that extra little something to get moving, if they had 2 or 3 weeks off, they don't at this point of the season, and they can't avoid these horror tackles coming at them.
All right, guys, the time is 6:20. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Blokes on the bench. So we were talking about the transfer window and how crazy it was, because I remember at the start of it, I remember listening to I think it was the United Stand on YouTube, and Mark Goldbridge, I think his name is, was like
one of my favorite people.
He was walking to work, as he sometimes does. He just sort of has the camera, and he was talking about how the rumor that Sanchez was joining United had just broken. It broke by one of the Italian reporters and newspapers, but this guy was sort of like a pretty reliable source.
Mm-hmm.
But I was sitting there going, yeah, it's not going to happen. He's pretty much a City player.
Right.
But like, I mean, it's been crazy. I mean, it really has.
Yeah.
And
a player the quality of Alexis Sanchez moving like this it doesn't happen often. And then going from a big club like Arsenal to the biggest club in England, one of the biggest clubs in the world, in Manchester United, I just think it's crazy. I mean, they have a wealth of talent, no pun intended, but it is fantastic to see that they're really going for it. Now, what that means this year, I don't know.
Yeah, the it's league, a building for this year. It's
right.
Not.
The league seems to be, and knock on wood, as much wood as I possibly can knock on, a 13-point lead hopefully holds and City win the title this year. But Manchester United are loaded to go into Champions League, and they're loaded up for next year as well. So there's a lot to be excited about as a Manchester United supporter, even if this isn't the year that they necessarily win the league.
Right. And I mean, it was tinged with sadness because I saw obviously that, I mean, I was excited for Alexi, but I saw the fact that obviously he got the number 7 shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, I remember some other people were saying the same thing. If he didn't get the number 7 shirt, what does that mean for the
mm-hmm.
summer?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Griezmann, I think that's done and, you know, that ship is sealed.
Right.
But I wanted to ask you, as somebody that obviously doesn't support United but can see it from the outside, like, where do you think United need to strengthen?
That's a great question. I think their wing backs are people that do phenomenal work in Antonio Valencia and Ashley Young. And I can't believe I'm going to praise Ashley Young because he's one of the players in the league that I like the least. He just has something about his game that makes me not happy to watch, but I think they're both. I know that Ashley Young, I think, is 32.
Yeah,
is getting up in age and isn't. He's playing basically out of position as well, and he's done the job for Manchester United over the years. And Antonio Valencia has done an amazing job, but again, sort of playing out of position. Although he's adapted to this, so it might be tough to displace him. But I could see Manchester United going out and getting some fullbacks in the offseason to take the place of these two guys or change the system somewhat. I don't really know. I mean, we talked about if Sanchez were going to come into the side, which now he has, who he would displace. And the consensus in the group, I believe, was that
Martial
would sit, where Martial has, and I don't know about this Saturday's match because it was kind of in and out of it, but he didn't. Martial started the first match against Spurs and looked to me, I want to continue to see him stay in and have Mata go to the bench because he's an older player and you could bring him off the bench at any point to alter the way things are working.
Right.
It's exciting to see a young player like Martial, and I want to continue to see him grow because he is good. We see it on a regular basis. Does he get enough playing time going forward with a player like Alexis Sanchez? Alexis Sanchez isn't going to the bench anytime soon. You know, that's for sure. So you've got a player like Martial who's young, or you've got Jesse Lingard, who we've been praising for a number of weeks.
That's crazy.
On the show
if it started at the start of the season, said Jesse Lingard or Messi Lingard or some United mm-hmm. fungus, and I would be like, you're off your head.
Right, right. No one would have known, but he's saved some points for you guys over the season and developed himself really well, and I applaud Mourinho for continuing to stick with him.
So what do you think of Rashford then? Is his place in jeopardy? Or?
Right, so that's probably the player who's going to be in the biggest danger and maybe have to be loaned out to another side so he can continue to develop. Again, a player I rate, and that wouldn't be a popular thing to say among City supporters, I can tell you that, because there's a lot of them that I know that don't like Rashford at all. But I think he rates, and this is all surprising to me still, that Mourinho wanted to have... I mean, he's almost given himself a Galacticos situation at United with his front. I know that we're not real high on what we're seeing out of Lukaku so far, but I still think he's fantastic and will only get better as time goes on and he develops the relationship with Alexis Sanchez and with Paul Pogba and with Martial. I mean, there's some really... Now, I wouldn't put Martial in the Galacticos...
Right.
Feeling
yeah.
and Lukaku isn't necessarily, although they spent the kind of money on him that would say this is a top player in the league. We expect to have him score 20 to 25 goals a year and team up with Paul Pogba, who they're roughly the same age, roughly the same amount of money was spent for both of them as well. I mean, these are the two guys who are going to lead this club going forward. And now you've got somebody like Alexis Sanchez who can just light it up at any time. So it's really exciting to see the stars there. But again, the younger players may be the ones that take the hit, and you don't get to see a Marcus Rashford develop at Manchester United.
Right.
Maybe he goes out on loan. And Mourinho, with his history at Chelsea, although I think this is more a Chelsea business model than a Mourinho model, is loaning out this young talent, and then they never return. So maybe Rashford's found himself in the same doghouse that Kevin De Bruyne found himself in at Chelsea, or some of these other players that left and went to another club and became stars, essentially, right, outside of the system that they were originally in.
But the thing is, with Rashford, I get the feeling that, I mean, where would you put him? Where would you send him, even? Either you're going to have to send him to a top five club somewhere else in other leagues.
Right.
I can't see him going into the Premier, the Championship.
No, definitely not.
That's a player that you want to keep at that high level.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, Mourinho's history with young players mm-hmm. has not been great.
Right.
He has got young players that he's taken, but they've generally already been in the side that he's taken over.
Right.
The one thing I will say about the whole Mourinho situation, because there's a lot of people talking about, you know, Mourinho's pattern with clubs, him leaving and, you know, starting a new project and then kind of that falls apart, is really that only starts with Real Madrid. The other teams he had already made plans to move, mm-hmm. And I'm kind of secretly happy with what's going on at Chelsea right now, because it kind of shows me that maybe, although I think that Mourinho was definitely had the knives out and was stabbing back, that there's something going on at Chelsea that's destroying the managers too. And we're seeing that with Conte too.
Right. Well, something's always going to go on at Chelsea. It just seems to be that this is what the project will always be like. A manager will come for 2 to 3 years, win a trophy or two, and then leave there not too far after. Now, all that being said, they sit in third right now.
Right. It's not the worst spot.
Yeah, it's not like they've fallen out like they did with Mourinho two years ago.
Where was it? Like 12th, 13th spot? I mean, they dropped right outside the
top of it. And that worked out well for them, because the following season they get a manager the quality of Conte. They don't have to deal with Champions League, and they win the league comfortably and were just a powerhouse, to be frank. I mean, nobody could compete with them for a long time. Once they knocked Manchester City off in December of 2016, I want to say, that was it. I mean, they just put a stranglehold on the league, and no one chased them down after that. But I think Chelsea will continue to do this until their ownership changes, or maybe they get into the new building. I know that there's some sort of plan for a new Stamford Bridge. I just don't know when or where it is. I'm not a Chelsea supporter, so I don't keep up on that news. But that's a team that you're going to always have an excess of money to spend, although I think that's part of Conte's problem, is he thinks he's not getting the money to spend. But then you also run the risk of not getting the returns that you are expected, and you're going to be out the door pretty soon. I wouldn't feel too bad for Conte, given he'll probably have any job in the world that he would want.
Not least the Italian job again.
Yeah, and wow, that would be a terrible thing to have to do to lead the national team again. I mean, it wouldn't be a bad place for him to fall.
Although they're not obviously in the World Cup this year. So.
Right, and that's a nice program to take over at that point, right? Because now the expectation is to build it back up. Although Italian football, the demands there are probably a lot higher, say, for than another country that didn't make the World Cup this year, like the United States, who, you know, now we're just all infighting about who should be the next president, and that's not really worth discussing right now. But it's a manager like Conte, I'd love to see continue to stay in the Premier League, because I think he's really good. It's just, where would he go if he fell out with Chelsea?
Well, who do Chelsea bring in when they get rid of him?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I have no idea at this point, because there's so many managers that are floating out there that anybody wants the money. You know, we know this, that Pep Guardiola is not leaving Manchester City for the next year or two. Mourinho, I would say he's not going to go anywhere, but the rumors continue to float around. And as I wanted to mention, he recently signed a contract extension through 2020, I believe. So he's going to be around, or this guarantees his payout for whatever occurs there. I really don't know. There's talk of Tuchel coming back. That was the manager at Borussia Dortmund, but I could see him being a great fit at Arsenal. Given that there's some hierarchy from Dortmund now at Arsenal, and obviously Arsenal have a manager who's been around since the Stone Age and probably need to make that change to grow and build into this new world that Arsenal find themselves in. I credit Wenger for keeping Arsenal as good as they've been, but a club like Arsenal shouldn't be playing for FA Cups as their big end-all be-all, and they shouldn't be getting knocked out of Champions League in the 16 every year, although they constantly face Bayern Munich, and there's no shame in that, really. But this fourth place finish every year for a couple years in the FA, Arsenal are bigger than that. Arsenal should be better than that. So I could see that job changing over, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know who could come in and take over.
The only people
Arsenal
I can think of is
Chelsea, sorry.
Chelsea would be like Diego Simeone, or maybe take a risk and go after somebody like Zidane.
Yeah, and there's a lot of talk now that Zidane's seat has gotten very hot, but they're still in their Champions League competition, and as we were talking about, that's coming up in a week or two. So that's where they probably have put all their swords in on and try to win that again. Now, Do I think they can win it for a third time? No, I don't think they can. And especially given the issues that they've had this year, they're not as good as they've been in the past. But they're still in it. And if you're in it, you can win it. So would I be surprised that we're sitting here in late May, early June saying, wow, Real Madrid won their third Champions League in a row? No, I wouldn't. I really favor Barcelona this year. I think that's the team to beat, or Bayern Munich. But we'll see. It's interesting.
So, like, talking about Chelsea, it now looks, and again, with regards to the January transfer window, nothing is set in stone until this contract is signed, that Hazard is on his way out. I mean, yeah, this has always been the case, and we talked about this before. Big clubs, especially the Spanish clubs, come in and take proven players that are lighting up our league. And I think it kind of damages our league in a way. We saw it, obviously, with Coutinho. Diego Costa was obviously a love-hate relationship with a lot of people. But I mean, there was no doubt that he lit the league up.
Right.
You know, and I worry about, I mean, I know obviously Manchester City are not the team that I support. I do worry about people like Kevin De Bruyne when that, you know, people start sniffing around him with paychecks and waving the cash around.
The good thing is that Manchester City can stave off any temptation because we could pay the wages that any of these other sides can. Now, to me, one of the most interesting things to talk about with talent leaving England that we all love, and we love the Premier League and these great players. Who was the last great player to leave the Premier League? I mean, world class, lighting it up, top Ballon d'Or type of talent.
I mean, I don't know.
Ronaldo was the last player that I would point to.
That far back?
That far back. Now, Gareth Bale was a huge transfer from Spurs.
So these are, I guess you could say these are potential world-class players, but they're lighting up the league maybe for one or two seasons.
Right,
I mean,
but Ronaldo, at the point that he left Manchester United, was a Ballon d'Or. You would put him in that realm. Where now in England, you know, Coutinho leaving Liverpool, that hurts the quality of the league. He's obviously a very good player. Liverpool will just keep going on without him. I think it worked out because they found Salah, and he's the player of the year this year to me. So they've kind of replaced him anyway and just kept marching on.
If they sold him for a ton of money, which they can use. I was saying to Wayne when he was last in the studio that they need to really concentrate in getting a goalkeeper.
Sure.
Some sort of, maybe somebody else in defense.
Yep.
Because they're top heavy. I mean, they're just really world-class strikers up front, and the midfield is okay as well, but it's their back. That's what they need to worry about.
Yeah, and as we saw this week when they played, or last week when they played Swansea and lost, I mean, this is a team that just knocked off Manchester City 2 or 3 weeks ago and then go and play Swansea and lose. And that's not a team that you would think would do something like that. And then even today's match against Spurs, where they were leading the match 1-0 for most of the way, and then Spurs get a wonder goal, and it's 1-1 in the 82nd minute. And in stoppage time, Salah scores this video game goal, and you're like, great, that's it. This is the end of the match. And Spurs find a way to bring it back and win a penalty in the dying seconds of the entire match and get a draw out of it. Liverpool should have seen that match off, and they weren't, because their defense let them down, in essence. And the officiating today wasn't great either, I would say. But at the same time, as we've talked about all the time, as we talked about as we were walking into the studio, this all averages out. And Liverpool need to win these big games all the time and then win those little games. And if they do, Liverpool are going to be, it's going to be a chase with Liverpool, City, and Manchester United next year for sure, given that all this talent that these three teams have. And next year, you know, it just resets and we go at this again, and no one can see the future. Like, obviously, that's, anything could happen here. Another player could get transferred or hurt or whatever. But Liverpool, that was a huge deal to sell Coutinho, and they did well to get a defender. But was he the answer? It's to me, it's not one player. It's going to be three or four players that are going to fix the problem at Liverpool. There's not really that one answer, unless Klopp changes the way that he plays and relaxes the attack and the press a little bit, so they play a little more defensive in their third and not give up these leaky goals. But they are, talk about top heavy. That they're just constantly flowing downhill. And Salah, every time I watch him, it's breathless stuff. He is the player of the year to me, without a doubt. Yeah, Harry Kane scores goals, and at one point today, they were equal on goals for the season, so I was feeling good about my wanting to put a bet down on Salah winning the Golden Boot this year, but Kane scores the tying goal on a penalty kick to save Spurs day and make some Arsenal supporters happy and some Chelsea supporters happy. I'm always glad to see other teams draw because we get a little further away there at the top, our Manchester sides. But I don't even know where I was going with any of this, Andy.
You're fine. I was just about to ask, what do you think of Spurs' project? Because remember at the start of the year, you had mentioned that you think they were up there.
I thought they were going to win the championship. Right. I thought they were going to win
England.
They
dropped off and they fell into, what, sixth spot maybe? Fifth or sixth spot?
Well, they suffered some injuries, and I think playing at Wembley, and we don't have our resident Spurs expert here to talk about it, but that didn't help them early on. Now, they are in Champions League. They've got a huge tie against Juventus coming up. The schedule makers really... Somebody at Spurs must have... I don't know. Somebody's on the wrong side of Spurs in the scheduling office. They had to play Manchester United, Liverpool, and Arsenal in a three-run match here. So Spurs' schedule has been really difficult. Now, they took Manchester United down this week, midweek, 2-0, in a crazy start to that match. But they held on, and credit to them. That's a huge win. And then getting the point today at Anfield, I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. Manchester City couldn't do it, so Spurs went in and got the job done, in essence. I mean, they could have won the match as well. So I still don't rate Pochettino as highly as we did maybe back in October. Right. And there's talk about him taking over the Real Madrid job, which...
Yeah, his name has been thrown around. I've heard that Manchester United's long-term goal is to sign Poch.
Mm. They'd want to sign Poch so they can bring Harry Kane up to Manchester, because the best player in England, who's English, should probably be playing at the biggest club in England. I mean, that's typical for what Manchester United want to do, so I wouldn't be surprised to see United. But at the same time, I mean, how much money are they possibly going to spend? I mean, their board are going to look at the bottom line and say, well, we're going to have to buy somebody like Harry Kane. We're going to have to spend 150 to 200 million pounds to get him. And are you going to invest that kind of money in one single player? I'm not a big fan of that. I think you take that money. And yes, City have spent the money, but they've spent that money on four or five players versus one or two players. Right. And I think that's a smarter business model when you need a team. One player is not going to change the entire dynamic.
Of course.
If that were the case, then Paul Pogba would have changed everything at Manchester United, but he needs other players around him. Not one player is ever going to make a team. So, yeah, I think Spurs are in the right direction. They're going to go in their new building next year, and if they can...
Have you seen the photographs and the video of it? It's
crazy.
Stunning.
Yeah, it's like a UFO. It's like the Emirates. It's better than the Emirates, in fact. I mean, when I saw the Emirates for the first time, I was like, this is a spaceship that's landed in London.
All right, guys, time is now 6:40. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. That was obviously a Yorkshire accent, improv Yorkshire.
Hello there, welcome to Vlogs on the Bench.
All right, so we're talking about the Premier League, and of course, we were talking about Tottenham. And
even without Alex here, we still talk about Spurs.
I know.
He's wormed his way into our brains here somehow.
He's probably got that warm, cozy feeling listening on the radio.
Oh, Spurs.
He's not listening.
So what I was going to say about Kane, however, is I don't think he would go to United. I don't think he would go to United. Even we talk about money talks, flash as much cash, and everyone has their price. Mm-hmm. But he's from there. He's a London boy. He's from there. That's a club that he grew up, what, round the corner from the ground? Mm. And he's happy there. I don't know if he would go to United.
Well, my point to that is that he's going to want to continue to grow his career and win titles, and if Spurs can't get into Champions League this year, which they still can. I mean, they're not the race for the top four is certainly not lost to them by any stretch of the imagination. There's a lot of football left to play, and they're right there in that I'd say 3 to 4 range. I don't think anybody's going to catch up to the Manchester sides at 1-2, but 3-4 is definitely up for grabs between Liverpool, Chelsea, Spurs, and I'm not going to discount Arsenal yet because somehow I've seem to be fond of them. I'm not really sure. I think that's Mark's fault. Mark's just a likable guy, and somehow
Arsenal rubbed off on you.
It might be all the Guinness we drink. But I think that if Spurs can't give him what he wants as far as the big stage goes, and those are the competitions of Champions League and winning a Premier League title, that he will ultimately want to see greener pastures elsewhere if they can be provided. And, you know, as you said, money's going to talk. So if somebody comes in with a big offer to Spurs to sell him on, that's a possibility. But at the same time, this is why they built the bigger stadium, so that they could pay the wages that these players are going to demand and that they will attract the talent. I mean, losing a generational talent like Gareth Bale, like a Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, only a side like Manchester United could survive losing Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, think about that. I think about that all the time, because at the time when Ronaldo was at United, City weren't very good and didn't have the talent to compete with a Manchester United. So seeing a player like Ronaldo running around was like watching Baryshnikov. It was like watching Michael Jordan. It was like watching a player or a talent.
Tom Brady.
That you just kidding. Could never, ever compete against or with. And that was back then. He became even a better player after that. He played in a way that the Premier League doesn't see, you know, that kind of player. But United kept going and building and getting bigger and winning and winning. Not at the same level that they won when he was there, but Spurs lose Gareth Bale, and their project goes completely off the rails because you can't replace one player with, like him, with these pieces that they bought. And now, you know, if Spurs were to lose someone like Christian Eriksen, I think they could survive right. that. I know some Spurs fans who aren't the biggest fans of Christian Eriksen. They think he is who he is, and we've seen the best of him already. Dele Alli, to me, is a player that just is so Jekyll Hyde. I mean, from one minute, and there's not been many of these minutes this year, he's brilliant. He looks like a next generational talent. And then others, he is totally petulant, disinterested, mm-hmm. not performing to the level that we've seen or he's capable of. And I think they could survive that and probably cash in. They couldn't survive losing Harry Kane. You can't survive losing a player that scores 25 goals a year. And look at what's happened with Everton losing Lukaku. I mean, he was the man putting the ball in the back of the net, and they weren't able to replace him, and they struggled out of the gate, and they've settled themselves down a little bit. But then this week, and you can go week to week, obviously results are always going to talk, but they get smashed by Arsenal, and I'm sure Arsenal were extraordinarily over the moon given their business dealings and playing at home and debuting Aubameyang and getting probably a cancerous entity in Sanchez out of their locker room. I think with his demands to leave, he probably, and we'd read some things in the press where there was some arguing in the locker room between him and some other players. So anytime you remove the dark cloud off of everybody, I think you kind of explode and get some forward energy going. Although they lost midweek as well to Swansea. So
yeah, Swansea. We need to talk about these sort of lower teams.
Well, the lower side of the table is really where it's at. I mean, Manchester City drew yesterday to Burnley, so that kept the lead from growing any bigger. And then United won, so the lead at the top of the table is 13 points. I have to put that in there, obviously. But the bottom of the table, we've definitely gotten tighter and tighter. I texted all of you today about Crystal Palace and Newcastle being the match of the day, knowing that every eye in the world that's interested in football is going to be watching Spurs and Liverpool play. But the battle at the bottom is just brutal. These teams are all so compact in on each other. Leicester City are at 35 points, and they're probably pretty safe. But after that, you've got Bournemouth and Everton at 31, and the bottom of the table is 20 points with West Brom. So, and again, a lot of football left to be played, and these teams are all going to play against each other. So the bottom of the table going from the top, from the bottom to the top, West Brom on 20 points, Huddersfield at 24, and Stoke at 24. So these are the teams that are in the drop at the moment. Swansea, with their 6 points over the past week, they've escaped, and they're at 24 points out of the drop zone only because of goal differential. But then Newcastle United sitting at 25, Southampton at 26, and Crystal Palace, Brighton.
It's so tight. From from 20th to 10th, there's only what?
Well, from 10th to 20th is 11 points.
11 points.
But from 11th to 20th is 7 points. So, and these teams are all going to play each other. They're all going to be 6-pointers. Newcastle versus Crystal Palace today was so entertaining. Ends in a 1-1 draw, which was somewhat disappointing because you would think, and both teams played their guts out. I mean, they absolutely went for it, realizing that these are the teams you have to beat. You're going to go against the top six side and you're going to lose. And the other teams that are in the struggle with you, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to go to Old Trafford and they're going to lose. They're going to go to Emirates and they're going to lose. But when you get a chance to get your hands on a team that's only 2 points above you and you're both in this relegation battle, you got to go for it, man. And I thought today's match, the energy at the stadium today was fantastic. Those supporters knew what was on the line. And I thought all the players performed outstanding. You see why they're both in the drop zone. Christian Benteke had a miss that he definitely should have hit in. And that could come back to haunt Crystal Palace when it's all said and done. And the fight's only going to get harder from here on in. Again, all these matches are 6-pointers, so it can flip really fast for a team. We were back here in October where Crystal Palace had 0 points after 7 or 8 matches, and they've pushed themselves all the way up into, where are you, Palace? Why can't I see you? Up to 14th place. So anything can happen over the next 2 or 3 months. And none of these teams made spectacular moves in the transfer window. Newcastle supporters have to be really disappointed, and Rafa Benitez is probably going to find himself a new job. Hey, maybe he'll return to Chelsea. He was there for a very brief stint back in 2011 or 12, whenever it was.
Really?
Things didn't work out.
He was with Liverpool, though, as well, wasn't he?
He was the legend at Liverpool, won the Champions League, and that was something that we kind of talked about as well. There's still so much to talk about, and we're running low on time, but I was thinking driving in today, with it being the Super Bowl, the big final for the NFL today, the great finals that we've seen in Champions League, and maybe it's a better conversation for when we get into May and June when those competitions happen, but one of the best Champions League finals of all time was when Liverpool pulled back against AC Milan down 2-0 to win 3-2. I mean, that's just like an all-time moment. For you as a United supporter, did you get to see the Champions League finals that United played back in 08, 09, and back in the late 90s?
I have to say the 99 won the treble.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just...
Right. I get chills thinking about it, and I'm not a United supporter. Yeah.
Just going crazy. And the lead up to that, obviously, with the Ryan Giggs goal against Arsenal, I mean, that whole season was just a fairy tale. And that's very rare because, obviously, you know, you talk about fairy tales as being like teams like Huddersfield, you know, making it into the Premier League. But when you're in the Premier League and you're established and you can create a fairy tale season too, not just winning the league, but also winning the FA Cup, winning the Champions League, you know, that's just... You know, just incredible.
Yeah.
So I have to always go back to that one.
And then the Champions League final against Chelsea, which is probably the pinnacle of Premier League football, having those two sides play each other in the Champions League final, was such an exciting moment in the history of the Premier League and the history of the Champions League, to be frank. I remember watching that final at a bar, having to stand outside because there were so many people inside that packed the bar, and just watching it through the glass. And when we got to penalty kicks at the end and John Terry falling flat and sailing the ball wide right, that was an insane final. And Manchester United, I mean, again, it's just amazing to think about a championship club like that winning the Champions League, which is something Manchester City have only been to a semifinal. I can't imagine what that must feel like for a supporter to beat, not only win Champions League, but to beat Chelsea in that final, beat your sort of at that point your blood rival,
right.
Which to me is always the Super Bowl as it stands right now in the Premier League. Whenever United play Chelsea, the world kind of stops for me, and they're playing each other on the day of the EFL Cup final too. So that is going to be a really fun day, to say the least. But yeah, I when it comes to great champions, Manchester United on winning as many as they have, and Liverpool, I was really looking forward to having you and Wayne engage on that conversation about which one of those two finals. Obviously, the drama of Liverpool coming back to win that final was insane. I mean, who would think down 2-0 you're going to come back and win like that? But the 99 treble winning side for Manchester United are, to me, the greatest champion team in the Premier League era. I don't think there's anybody that can really stand up to what they
did. This could be your year.
It could be, and wow, that would be an amazing feeling. And again, as a supporter, to go from like, yeah, we're doing all right, we're doing well, oh, we won, we're getting into Champions League, we finished fourth, we won an FA Cup, wow, that's amazing. I never in my life would think that we won the Premier League title on this last second goal. That's amazing.
Aguero!
Yeah, I mean, just amazing moments. And then the 13-14 chase. But I'm not counting on beating a Bayern Munich or a Real Madrid or a Barcelona, any of those teams in the Final Four.
I'd put money on you guys.
Much less get there. And don't forget PSG still hanging around there.
I don't. I think it's City's year. And this is why I say don't discount, you know, things like the EFL Cup. Because if you win that on top of everything else, just clear the house, like that would be, I mean, that would beat United's record. So,
right.
You know, I mean, it wouldn't have as many years, but, I mean, in 1 year, do everything like that. That would just be incredible.
We've seen this domestic double one a couple times now. City did it back in 13-14, and then Chelsea did it the following year. They won the EFL Cup, and they won the Premier League. So it's not out of the question, although facing a side like Arsenal in the EFL Cup final is going to be a little more difficult than, I forget who we faced back in the other ones, Stoke maybe? I don't even remember. It's been so long. But, yeah, there's definitely good days ahead for City. I'll get my little City plug in here somehow, some way. Did draw to Burnley this week, lost 2 points, potential 2 points, because Raheem Sterling missed an absolute sitter. Hopefully that doesn't stick in his head too long, because he's a big part of the success this side has had this year. And he has scored so many late goals for this club this year, and so many goals, period, that I'm not going to hold it against him that he missed one. We wouldn't be in the position we're in without Raheem Sterling doing what he's done. So, unfortunately, it happened. Dropped some points. United win some points. So, we go to 13 points after making it a 15-point lead midweek, after Spurs helped us out in beating United 2-0, but we draw to Burnley. United win yesterday 2-0 against Huddersfield.
Yep. Which kind of give a little bit of a... You know, like, we got beat by them at their grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the big, I don't believe at the time in October when we played them, none of the top four had played Huddersfield at their ground at that point. I know City had played them at the Etihad, but they hadn't played them at the John Smith Arena, which it is. So when we got beat, like, 2-1, I believe. Yeah, it was 2-1. I could see the whole everyone laughing at us. But, the only, like, they made it difficult for City. I mean, City.
For sure.
You know, beat them, but they made it difficult. So I think we had a little bit of a, we have to beat these guys at home.
Right.
A bit of a statement. So I was relieved when we did.
And debuting Sanchez in front of the home supporters.
Right.
Probably a little easier than having him go out there at Wembley in front of everybody. Although I'm sure
they were booing him as well.
Well, I'm sure, as it's a Spurs stadium, I'm sure they were loving booing a former Arsenal player.
Right.
But Wembley being in London, it was probably 60% Spurs fans, 40% United fans. I mean, there are a large, and I'm not taking a dig at you or any United supporter, but there are a lot of United supporters in London. So.
I find it hilarious. I was telling you this. So there was a Talk Sport phone in about a month ago, just before Christmas, and this caller was calling in about United. He was a City fan. And he was talking about, it was just before the derby. And he says, we're going to beat them and send them all on the train back to London. And everyone's like, next caller, City fan, Cockney.
Mm-hmm.
It was hilarious. Mm-hmm. You know what? There's some truth to that. You know, they do the surveys and they paint the colors of the clubs.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? In a day and age where the Premier League is now worldwide,
right,
your fan base is going to grow.
We're sitting here in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Right.
You know, I'm sitting next to an Englishman.
Irishman.
Sorry, Irishman.
Or British.
British, yeah. Sitting next to someone from New York who developed his love affair with Manchester City through a rock band. I mean, you know, there's so many ways we come to this game now. And you'll see documentaries or reality shows where they're in Africa or they're in Asia, and you'll see some guy walking down the street in a Manchester United shirt or in a Chelsea shirt, and hopefully one day a Manchester City shirt. These clubs are all reaching out to everybody around the world to try to get their social media presence as big as possible for all of us to be buying their shirts to fill their coffers so that they can compete and sign players like Kevin De Bruyne and sign players like Alexis Sanchez. I think this whole where you're from, and I get it all the time on Twitter when I engage, where they'll come back.
Oh, yeah, where in Manchester are you from?
Yank. You have nothing that you can say about this whole thing. I'm like, I get to watch more of the Premier League than you get to watch. And I've been there and I've been to those buildings. So I have a little bit of credit going for me. And getting to talk here with the blokes on the bench, I think, helps develop even more, social grace with learning how to talk to supporters from other sides. You know, we've talked about banter in the past and how it can be disrespectful, and that's not a lot of fun. You know, sometimes you take your dig, but it's all in fun. It's all in jest, which is
right,
part of the good nature part of the game. But when things get nasty, it's not quite so much fun, and Twitter is a fire with a lot of not so nice, fun people, especially when you tell them that you're, or they find out that you're not from Manchester there.
Right. We're talking about football, like the, I think you'd mentioned documentaries a few minutes ago. There is a documentary that I sent to you, but I want to put it out there. It's a great documentary. It's called Wimbledon, The Crazy Gang, and it's on YouTube. If you're into soccer and want to watch a good documentary, it's about the Wimbledon team, which I believe Robbie Earl played for a few years, and it was about them getting to the FA Cup final. And this was when Vinnie Jones was on the team.
There you go. There's a name.
Psycho Vinnie.
Yeah, there's a name. I saw a really cool documentary, I think on Copa 90, about Millwall and Leeds and why Millwall and Leeds supporters have the reputation that they have. Very interesting stuff.
Have you seen the new Leeds badge?
That's
terrible.
So bad. The good news is we're not going to see them in the Premier League anytime soon. They just sacked their manager today, I believe. So that's not a side that's going anywhere anytime soon.
Dreadful.
Really
dreadful.
Bad. Really bad.
But yeah, apparently the badge is some symbol where, like, when people go abroad as Liverpool, as Leeds fans, they kind of pump their chest.
That was a bad.
That was not a jib or anything. Yeah, they pump their chest, and so the logo has this guy with his hand over his chest. I'm like, ah, that's just tasteless. Just keep the old logo.
It's bad.
But before we go, obviously with the Super Bowl on, Tom Brady. I am not a Patriots fan by any stretch of the imagination, but obviously he's going for a sixth ring. Is there anybody comparable in the Premier League to that kind of 40 years old? I mean, the only person I can think of as a United fan is obviously Ryan Giggs getting to like the Premier League finals. But
yeah, I think Ryan Giggs scored a goal every year that he played over the course of his 17-year career. It's something ridiculous like that. Not a big Ryan Giggs fan personally, but I don't think there's any level, but it's a different game. But it's crazy because the NFL is all about car crashes and hitting into each other. Where football it has a physical nature to it, obviously, but not on the intent that the NFL does. I don't think that anybody could play to that level for that long. Lionel Messi is still the best player on the planet, best player I've ever seen.
All right, guys, that's about it. Don't forget there is a game tomorrow, Watford versus Chelsea. That'll be interesting.
Conte has to win, or he doesn't have a job, apparently.
All right, guys, we'll be back next week with the full studio. I'm Andy.
I'm Christian.
Have a great week, guys.
You've been listening to Blokes on the Bench with your host, Andy Richardson, on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. Join us again next Sunday at 6 for another edition and feed us back at facebook.com/blokesonthebench.